Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to Black and Cold, which is a true crime podcast for the overshadowed. I am Nichelle, your host, and I am back this week to bring you guys another case. So I got to mention something really, really important before we jump into our episode today, and that is the verdict of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who was found guilty for killing George Floyd last May. Y'all, this is big because this is some type of justice for George's family. I know this one verdict can't bring him back or bring back the other innocent lives of Black men and women who were taken at the hands of law enforcement, and it doesn't determine what will happen in the future, but it is a start. And it is most importantly accountability. So I know a lot of us will definitely be awaiting for the day of his sentencing. Before we get into this case, I actually just want to shout out my lovely friend Kerry, as she actually helped me write this story for today. Like, y'all don't understand, sometimes I really be struggling getting my notes and my thoughts together. So Kerry really came through for me with this one. She is amazing, and I am super grateful for her assistance in this episode. So hey, Kerry, thank you, and shout out to you. Lastly, if you aren't doing so already, please follow us on Instagram at black_cold_podcast. Okay, my bad, y'all. I'm done talking for real this time. Let's jump into this episode. The story I have for you today is out of the lovely state of California, when a former basketball star making a pretty long road trip back home just vanished along the way. Now, he had some ups and downs in his life, but at the time of his drive, he was in frequent contact with his loved ones. But then they just stopped hearing from him out of nowhere. This is the disappearance of Rico Harris. Rico Omar Harris was born on May 19, 1977. He grew up in Alhambra, California, and is the oldest of four other siblings. Rico's parents, Margaret Fernandez and Henry Harris, are divorced, and his father, who was a former semi-professional basketball league player, has been pretty absent in Rico's life. Though life was rough for Margaret, she had her hard days as a single mother, she did the best that she could by raising Rico and her other children. And at 6'9 and 280 pounds, he was often referred to as a gentle giant. And as a gentle giant, Rico loved his mom so much, but he also had a great love and passion for basketball. Following the steps of his dad, Rico had big dreams of becoming a professional NBA player, and he wanted to make it big to help his family and everyone around him. Rico graduated from Temple City High School and took the gift of basketball to Arizona State University, but he wasn't there for too long as he ended up getting benched after he was arrested for unlawful imprisonment. Now, those charges were dropped, but Rico ended up transferring to another school. He went to Los Angeles City College, and this was better for him. He was closer to his family, and it was a new slate for him to show off his skills. And eventually, him and his team ended up winning the California Community College State Championship, and Rico even won the MVP title there. Though Rico was great at what he did have a few setbacks in his career. Rico began heavily drinking during his time in college, and he even began to use alcohol as a crutch. He was struggling academically. He wasn't getting along with many of his teammates or coaches. He just seemed to be going through it internally. And much of this could have stemmed from his childhood. But one thing Rico did know for sure was that he wanted to go pro. He never lost his vision on being a professional basketball player at all. And he went on and even entered two NBA drafts, but unfortunately, he never got chosen. So by the spring of the year 2000, Rico actually joined the Harlem Globetrotters, which is an American exhibition basketball team. But at 23 years old, unfortunately, his basketball career came to a sudden end after a serious head injury. He was only able to play with the Globetrotters for 2 months. So with his life doing a complete 180, Rico became very depressed and started to have no interest in basketball whatsoever. His mom says he was so down that he wouldn't even watch it if it came on TV. So at this point, Rico moved back to his hometown of Alhambra with his family, and because of his serious depression, he sadly fell into drug abuse using substances like pills, cocaine, and even meth. He surpassed his alcoholism at this point. Rico's family and close friends were so devastated. They saw this person that they loved just decline, and it was basically like he was trying to fill the void of basketball with all the wrong things. It got really bad, according to his friends, and it was obviously hard to watch. His friend David Lara told Fox Sports, quote, "It's a local tragedy. He was the best basketball player this city ever saw, and then you just see him in the street, drunk, and asking for quarters." And that is really terrible. Just imagine not being able to do something you love so much anymore. Like, that had to be really hard for him. And unfortunately, it still got worse for Rico. He was arrested over 100 times between the years of 2000 and 2007 while he was living back home. And get this, during one of these incidents while he was locked up, he ended up in the same jail as his father, who I mentioned was not really in his life. And this made Rico even more upset, like, as he should, because that's not how he wanted the reunion to be with his dad. According to the LA Times, Rico was also diagnosed with bipolar disorder somewhere along the lines during all of this, but he did not like how the medication made him feel, so he stopped taking it. It wasn't until Rico had a prescription overdose in 2007 where he knew he really needed to change his life back around. He then made the decision to check himself into a Salvation Army rehab center in downtown LA. His life started to change for the better once Rico began to come to terms with the fact that it wasn't the end for him because he couldn't play ball professionally. He still had a whole life to look forward to. And as time passed, Rico began to work multiple jobs, and one of those included being a private security guard, as he most definitely had the height and the build for it. Rico even left his mom's house. He moved to downtown LA on his own. So his life was definitely making some positive changes at this point. Rico was now sober for 5 years of his life. And his life even got brighter in 2012 when he met and started dating Jennifer Song. Rico was head over heels for Jennifer. They initially had a long-distance relationship as she lived in Seattle, Washington, but they wanted to make their relationship work. So after some time of dating, they began to get more serious, and there were talks about marriage and having a family together. So as things got more intense with the two, Rico was ready to make the move to Seattle to be where Jennifer was, just because it made more sense for them at the time. Jennifer was a real estate broker and she had her own business. So Rico proceeded with this move to Seattle towards the end of 2014. And things started off kind of rocky when he initially moved. He seemed to be sad a lot and he was a bit uneasy about being in Jennifer's space. But with time, things began to look up for Rico. He even got a breakthrough where he was offered a position to sell timeshares part-time. And after doing that, he was then presented with a full-time opportunity as a property appraiser. Rico had an interview and everything set up. But before he officially settled into this new life, he decided to take another trip back to his hometown of Alhambra. So on October 8th, 2014, that's when he decided to make the drive. All of my New York listeners, if you are planning any type of event soon and are looking for some of the best balloon and decoration services, Neat Designs is here for you. Neat Designs offers the most gorgeous setups, whether it's for a birthday, baby shower, or just a simple brunch. And y'all, it is Black owned. You can see the work that they do on their Instagram at NEAT_designs_. So there was a Disappeared episode that featured Rico's story titled California Leaving, and Jennifer pretty much explained that on Wednesday, October 8th, 2014, her and Rico had some tension between them. Sometime after their disagreement, she left their home, but when she came back, Jennifer realized Rico was gone. Now, Rico did eventually text her, and he told her that he just needed to clear his mind and that he was driving through Oregon. So Jennifer just assumed that he was heading back to Alhambra, which he was, because as I mentioned, he decided to go back to his mom's house one last time. And just to be clear, this was an 1,100-mile drive from Seattle, so it was far. Jennifer wasn't the happiest that Rico was going to do these long drives in such a short amount of time, but she just tried to give him his space. You know, she wanted to let him see his family, and she also knew he still needed to bring some of his belongings back from California. On top of that, Rico knew he had to be back in Seattle by the evening of Friday, October 10th, so he could be on time and fully prepared for his interview. And also, according to Fox News, he even had a barbecue to attend with Jennifer, so he had a few obligations. Rico made the 18-hour drive to Alhambra, and he arrived at his mom's house at 2 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, October 9th. He was awake for 30 hours straight at this point. When Rico got to his family's home, he greeted his mom as usual, but Margaret's mother instinct kicked in, and she knew something was off with her son. She asked him what was going on, but he kind of brushed it off. He then started to pick up some of his belongings, and he even asked his mom for specific items that she felt weren't important. Again, Margaret knew this behavior was strange, and she knew this was not her Rico. And sometime during his visit, Rico also went out to eat with his younger brother, but that's all he did when he was there. After a little bit of packing and some family time, he was ready to make that 18-hour drive again and head back to Seattle. So Rico is up for a crazy long time at this point. Remember, when he arrived to his mom's, he was already awake for 30 hours. So if you do some math and add the hours that he was with his family plus his drive back, that's a long time and that's a bit concerning. And Margaret told Rico to take a nap before he left because she knew he needed to get some rest. But he insisted that he needed to leave. And at 1 o'clock a.m., so now it's the morning of October 10th, Rico called his mom from the road to let her know that he was gone. Shortly after he called Margaret, Rico called Jennifer, and she was surprised that he was on the road as well. Jennifer also felt that he needed more rest, but to help aid with keeping him awake, the two spoke on the phone. But after speaking for about 3 to 4 hours at this point, Jennifer began to get sleepy herself, so she decided to go to bed. Now, as soon as she woke up, which was just a few hours later, at 8 o'clock a.m., Jennifer called Rico immediately to check on him, and he let her know that he was in the Sacramento area getting some gas. Jennifer described in the Disappeared episode that Rico was sounding very tired, but they spoke for about 15 minutes or so. So Margaret called Rico shortly after he spoke with Jennifer, and he told his mom that he was located at the Interstate 5 and he was getting some food. Margaret felt secure that her son was okay, but she stressed to him that he still needed to get some sleep. So another hour or so goes by, and it is now 10 o'clock a.m., and Jennifer decided to call Rico again, but this time he did not answer. Jennifer kind of got uneasy at this point, but she chose not to panic. She ended up feeling slightly better when after 45 minutes passed and Rico texted her saying, quote, "Sorry I missed your call. I'm doing well. Thinking about you," end quote. But it wasn't enough to ease the strange feelings Jennifer was experiencing because this was not like Rico at all to do that, and she felt it was completely off. So she called him back an hour later and got no response again. And this time, there was no text to follow either. And according to her interview, she began to get his voicemail, which at first she thought was because of the bad service. But after some time, it was just not sitting well with her. So she started to feel real concerned and she called Rico's mom. Jennifer wanted to notify authorities immediately, but Margaret wasn't too worried. She wanted Jennifer to wait at least 2 days before filing anything because she knew her son and she knew how much he loved his alone time and his space. Margaret was not alarmed at this point. But it wasn't until Tuesday, October 14th, just 4 days after the last time anyone has heard from Rico, when the Alhambra police came to Margaret's door and told her that her son's black Nissan Maxima was found abandoned in the Lower Site, which is an isolated area in Yolo County. And this is about 60 miles northwest of Sacramento. According to Fox Sports, a Yolo County officer is the one who spotted the odd vehicle. And this officer actually saw the car the day before on Monday the 13th, but he knew once he saw the same vehicle in the same place 2 days in a row, something didn't seem right. So he eventually checked the car where he noticed it appeared to be a mess. Like there were papers, CDs, and credit cards all over. It was also reported that the car's battery was dead and there was no gas in the vehicle. Now, this same responding officer then ran the plates to see if it was stolen, which it wasn't, but that's what prompted him to call his headquarters. And when he called, he told them about the unusual car sighting. And once they figured out who the car was registered to, that's how 2 and 2 was put together, where the Alhambra police ended up at Margaret's home. Once Margaret heard the news about Rico's car, she filed a missing persons report for her son that day, which was on October 14th. Officers initially thought Rico had car issues, hence the dead battery and no gas, and they were thinking maybe he left his vehicle there to seek some help. According to the disappeared episode, Detective Dean Nyland was one of the lead investigators who helped run this case, and he was able to find out that Rico's phone pinged in the Redwood Valley area, 70 miles from where his car was found. Now, Detective Nyland was able to track down that specific location, and he actually got in contact with the man from that area. And this man informed the law enforcement that he had both Rico's phone and Rico's backpack. According to this civilian, him and his family were driving and they spotted this backpack on the side of the road. And just to note where they found the backpack, it was only 2 miles from where Rico's car was found. So him and his family pulled over to see if there was any identifying information, but there was nothing. So they held on to it. Inside the backpack were jumper cables and Rico's cell phone. So when law enforcement notified Margaret, Rico's mom, about this, she was slightly confused because Rico would typically have jumper cables in his trunk. And that's not the only thing that was strange. Investigators were also able to recover selfies as well as videos in Rico's phone. And what they saw was quite alarming. The videos in his phone showed Rico listening to music in his car, but he was tossing CDs and papers all over. And this explains why the car was a mess when it was discovered. Now, it is unclear if Rico was aware that he was recording himself, but it was apparent to his loved ones that his state of mind may have been foggy. They suggested that he may have been abusing again. Police recovered very little alcohol from Rico's vehicle. Extensive searches were done in the Lower Site area where Rico's car was discovered. Rescue teams searched high and low around the hills and creeks along Route 16. Their search was about a 27-mile stretch. Search dogs, deputies on ATVs, and even helicopters were brought in to help conduct the search, but there were no signs of Rico anywhere. Where did this 6'8 man go? Like, no one could understand how he was missed. And from my understanding, the areas where the searches were taking place, they were kind of dangerous. Like, the location was extremely rocky, which would make it hard for someone to just roam around. And it was known for having bears and other dangerous animals. But it wasn't until searchers discovered very, very large foot tracks, and they were a size 18. They also eventually recovered a sole insert for a large tennis shoe, consistent with that of a size 18. And there's another head scratcher. According to News One, investigators realized Rico's car was not in the right direction. Where it was found was actually 50 miles west of the I-5, which is the interstate he would have been on to head back to Seattle. So for me, this kind of made me wonder, like, did he have somewhere else he was trying to go? Or was he just driving and exploring open road? Because 50 miles west from the route that you should be on, like, that's a detour. That's pretty far. Law enforcement towed Rico's car and it was ran for fingerprints and DNA, but nothing came of this. The vehicle was also thoroughly searched and investigators recovered Rico's wallet. Other than the cards that were scattered in the vehicle, there were additional credit cards in the wallet as well. Now, the wallet contained no cash, nor did it have Rico's license. But during the investigation, the police learned that Rico's Discover card was also missing, but they were able to determine that it hadn't been used. As I mentioned, many of Rico's loved ones felt he may have used again at this point, as too many things were not adding up. Sometime during that summer, according to Jennifer, Rico confided in her when he relapsed one day, and he also came clean about this relapse to his other friend David, so I can definitely understand why this may have been a concern of theirs. Almost 1 week after his disappearance, Detective Nylon issued mass public alerts to people of the area to be on the lookout for Rico, and there were three different sightings that came about from this. The first sighting was a person that came forward and said that they saw a very, very tall African-American male sitting on a guardrail, which was about 3 miles from where Rico's car was at the lower site. And the guardrail was said to have been around 1,500 feet from where that family found Rico's phone and his backpack. The second sighting, someone said they saw a very tall African-American male walking southbound on Highway 18. The last people who came forward at this time was a couple who said they saw a very tall African-American male walking around a black car looking confused and disheveled. I would definitely imagine that these three sightings were Rico, as they all had the same description. I mean, not everyone is 6'8", so he for sure stands out. And it's not like the area was super busy or anything either, so it's not like many people were just walking around. So from what I know, I believe all of those sightings were within the time frame of October 10th-ish up until when the car was discovered. Now, a week later, in the early hours of October 18th, another person came forward and said that they saw someone who appeared to be Rico walking near some bushes next to the lower site. So the search team followed up after this lead and they found yet again size 18 foot tracks, which were consistent with Rico being there. But these foot tracks were not there when searchers looked at first. So this would make things a bit more questionable because this is a week after he initially vanished, right? Did Rico leave this area and come back after a week? And according to the disappeared episode, where the lower site is, kind of what I mentioned earlier, I mean, this is a remote area. Like, nothing is around there. The closest thing to civilization was 30 miles away. So law enforcement suggests that someone probably had to drive with Rico for him to go back there after all of those days. But Detective Nylon believes it may be possible that Rico returned to go and get his car. But remember, by that time, a week later, it was already towed by law enforcement. So he thinks after Rico realized his vehicle wasn't there, he just disappeared into the area or maybe went somewhere else after that. There are no more alleged sightings of Rico Harris after the last person came forward. So this also makes Detective Nylon believe it's a possibility he may have caught a ride with someone. I mean, if he was just wandering around this remote area, you would assume someone would have had to spot him eventually. Detective Nylon also told Fox Sports that he returned to the Sacramento area in mid-November, Another search was completed through the valley, and this search seemed to be more extensive. It included cadaver dogs and professional divers whom specifically checked the sinkholes in the creek. This search was done for a whole weekend, and now missing for 6 weeks, there were still no signs of Rico. Because of his battles that Rico faced in the past, law enforcement even initially checked and then rechecked local homeless shelters, but again, they still got nothing. This case, y'all, wow. Nothing has really been solid for law enforcement in Rico's case. There are no immediate signs of foul play. At first, you know, I kind of thought that because his car was in such a disarray, I thought maybe someone went through his vehicle. But we now know Rico was the one who made the mess in his car, as investigators were able to see that through his videos. I will say, I don't believe he was recording himself intentionally. That just doesn't seem likely in my opinion. Even though it was very little, the alcohol contents that were found in his car, we can assume that Rico was drinking around the time of his disappearance. But his backpack nor his phone show any signs that they were forcibly taken from him either. So again, so many questions as to why they were just on the side of the road. Also, we are talking about a man who was a security guard. He was a ball player. He is built, and I'm pretty sure he is probably strong. And I'm not saying that it can't happen because it can, but who is really going to go and mess with him? And because of his height, I don't think he's just hiding somewhere. And then the biggest kicker to me is that after a week, new footprints of a size 18 shoe were found. So that is consistent with Rico returning to the location where he vanished from. And I don't doubt that, but where was he the whole time? I gotta say it again, him wandering around that remote area, I would think with time, someone would spot him at some point. And if Detective Nyland is right with his theory and believes Rico got a ride, again, where was he that whole time? Where did he go for no one to notice him? I don't know, y'all. Since his disappearance, Rico hasn't used any of his credit cards or anything. It really appears that he just vanished without a trace. Jennifer knows the love of her life and, you know, she knows he had his own inner demons, but she stresses that she doesn't feel Rico just walked away from his life like this. He had no reasoning to be in the Lower Sight area other than to take a nap. But again, that location was not on his route to Seattle, so just a lot of questions in this case. Other than being diagnosed with bipolar disorder, I haven't found that Rico had any other prior medical issues, and he previously had no indication of suicidal ideations. Margaret and Jennifer have found comfort by staying close to one another and supporting each other while joining other families in the same situation. They continue to look for their beloved Rico to this day. He was 37 years old at the time of his disappearance. So there are many theories for this case. The most popular theory of them all is that Rico was having a manic episode due to his bipolar disorder. Many people think that the videos from his phone that showed him tossing things around the car, those were signs of erratic behavior. Now, I looked up some of the symptoms associated with manic episodes, and there were some that reflected Rico's behavior from what we know. The first symptom is a decreased need for sleep, and that was one that stuck out to me. As we know, Rico was up for at least 2 days straight before he disappeared. Another symptom was being abnormally upbeat and like up and jumpy, and this can be consistent with the behavior from the videos in his phone. We unfortunately can't confirm if this is what Rico was experiencing at the time, but this is one that many people believe. And if this were the case, my heart breaks for Rico that he was not able to get treated. Another theory I'll share with you guys is that Rico just wanted to feel free for a little, and he decided to travel to an area to see more of Mother Nature just for some peace. Many people suspect that He was on the verge of a breakdown, and I mean, he had so many battles his whole life, and he overcame so much. So a lot of people just felt like he was overwhelmed, and he was just sightseeing to clear his thoughts, but he eventually died somewhere in the area. Lastly, many people feel that Rico may have taken his own life, or he met with foul play after he reached the lower site area. But with the heavy searches that law enforcement was said to have done, no body has ever been recovered, which leaves people wondering about the last three theories I just said. Either way, I think we all know Rico's mental health had a lot to do with his disappearance. And my listeners know I stress this all the time. Mental health is so important to take care of, you guys. Also, my heart really goes out to anyone struggling with addiction. It is so easy to shame and judge people, and I feel like addiction also has this stigma nowadays for some reason, and it shouldn't. At the end of the day, someone knows something in regards to Rico. I mean, someone has to. If you have any information on the disappearance of Rico Harris, you can call the Yolo County Sheriff's Office at 530-668-5280.